ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Sport.
It's over and lunch.
End of the over.
Bows are flicked off.
We're heading off for a refreshment and a meat pie.
And that ends the morning session.
That is lunch.
You're listening to Grandstand at Lunch.
On your radio.
ABC Sport Digital.
And take us with you on the ABC Listen app.
Grandstand at Lunch, just after 4 o'clock local time. It is the end of the first session, at least, before the start of the second session, and it is the 40-minute break. So we've had 2 hours of cricket, and here's what you've missed so far. First of all, England won the toss. They chose to bat. Will Jacks comes in for the injured Mark Wood. Meanwhile, for the Australians, Josh Inglis comes into the middle order. Michael Nisa makes a surprise return for the first time in 3 years. There's no Khawaja, and there's no room for Nathan Lyon, but Mitchell Starc was back to his old tricks.
Last ball of this first over, none for five. Starc to the lefty. He's on his way and Duckett is forward edging and he's caught and it slips. Straight slip. He's out. A golden duck, a primary. You've got to cough up, fellas, if you're in the primary club. Duckett out for a duck. A well-pitched delivery forced him to play and he nicked it. Straight into the slips cordon, and Labuschagne standing there at slip took the easiest of catches low down.
Can't keep him out of the game. The very next over, Mitchell Starc at it again.
Starc goes in again and he's on the back, but he's chopped it on. He's chopped it into his stumps. He went to cut too close to his body and it hit the bottom edge and went into the stumps. Starc has two for. Following his temper in Perth, and England looking bedraggled, winning the toss, batting in the third over, 2 for 5.
All the tremors through the dressing room again for England at 2 for 5, but they were able to repair things. Joe Root with opener Zach Crawley, who responded with a little milestone of his own. Crawley just turns it away on the onside, takes off for a single and gets through, and that is 50 for Zach Crawley. And a superb response from the English opener after a pair in Perth. He responds here with an unbeaten 50 at the Gabba. Brings us to lunch, the end of the first session on day one of the second test at the Gabba. Grandstand cricket on ABC Sport. Corbin Middlemass with you on Grandstand at Lunch. England 2 for 98 with Root not out on 32, Crawley on 61. England 2 for 98. My feature guest during the lunch break on the opening day of the second test at the Gabba is the Chief Executive of Cricket Australia, Todd Greenberg. Todd, appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Here we are. After 12 short days, we're back at the cricket.
It feels like 12 long days, to be honest. It felt like a long gap between the end of the second day in WA to here. But, pristine conditions, perfect for cricket, and a hell of a first 2 hours.
So the breakdown of Perth, I know everyone's asking the same questions. How much was it worth? How much did Cricket Australia miss out on by that test lasting only 2 days?
Yeah, look, first and foremost, it's always nice to win. So it's always nice to be 1-0 up in the Ashes. Unashamedly, we would have loved a few more days of cricket because revenue is important for cricket.
Yeah.
And it's important for a variety of reasons, but primarily every dollar we make, we put back in trying to get more boys and girls playing. So, yeah, there's several million dollars left on the table for us. So that stung a little bit. I'm just hoping the cricketing gods look after me over a 5-test match series. So I'm playing the long game on this one.
Yeah. Is there a problem too that as much as, yeah, that's the short term, that's, you know, you have to refund tickets, say, for day 3 and 4. What does it mean long term? When the next time you sit down, say, with the broadcasters and basically you try to negotiate and they say, well, hang on, we had these test matches. They were meant to go 5 days. We only got 2 days worth of content.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it catch up with you there as well?
Oh, look, over time, that's what I'm saying. Hopefully it evens itself out over time. But you're right, broadcasters, our partners, the experience for travelling fans who come across, there's a number of inputs. But I reminded myself that it was 104 years between times at a 2-day test match in an Ashes series. So I'm hoping that it'll be 104 more years. It'll be someone else's problem next time.
You're already ready to go in those new negotiations.
Yeah,
got the,
that's
got
right.
The stats down. But,
that's right.
Well, great to have Todd Greenberg with us during the lunch break, Grandstand at Lunch on ABC Sport. Just a little bit on your own background, by the way.
Sure.
I saw you last night when we were exiting the BBL launch. So thank you for having us, first of all.
It was good fun, wasn't it?
The new season, of course, all here on ABC Radio. But Phil Jakes mentioned to me on the way out. He said, oh, did you know, by the way, Todd started as a development officer.
I did.
At Cricket New South Wales.
Yeah, my first job out of university was putting on a tracksuit at Cricket New South Wales and driving around Western Sydney teaching kids how to hit Kanga cricket balls off tees. So I say that regularly to people in our participation teams and those who are effectively starting their professional journey. If I can do it and make my way up to a really senior role in cricket, then it's available for everybody. And, you know, I've had lots of luck and I've had people who believe in me over my career, but I'm now sitting in an incredibly fortunate position leading the games, the country's national sport.
Yeah. Well, there's really three major codes in this country, being obviously the AFL, the NRL, and cricket. Cricket Australia being obviously the governing bodies. And obviously the sports are rugby league, Australian rules football and cricket.
Yeah.
So when you were a development officer back then, did you have this as a vision? Like, is this something that you wanted to do? Or when did it occur to you that, hey, I want to lead a major sports organisation in the country? And now you've not done just one. You're on to your second gig out of those three.
Yeah, I don't think it's something that you plan. I mean, I've always had aspirations and I've always been ambitious. And I say to my own staff now, ambition's not a dirty word. Ambition's a good thing. I want people to come to work every day and want to be better and further their careers. And that quite often means leaving an organisation to go and do something better. So I think ambition's a good thing. Caveated in the right way and ensuring that you treat it in the right respect. But, you know, on reflection of my career, the thing that's mattered most to me is people giving me opportunities. And then when someone does give you an opportunity, even when sometimes you don't think you're ready, you always want to pay that back. And how do you pay it back? You work damn hard and you make sure you put back into the sport what they've given you the opportunity to do.
Todd Greenberg, the Chief Executive of Cricket Australia, my guest on lunch here, Grandstand at Lunch on ABC Sport. The pink ball concept. So we had 12 days, obviously, to come up with content and try to the hungry engines of the sports media and the cricket media in particular. And I noticed a lot of the content from the UK was about the pink ball concept. And for us here in Australia, it's very much second nature. I don't think any of us raise our eyebrows when we see a pink ball fixture on the calendar. But we're really the only ones that have taken the ball and run with it. So if you look at the 24 that we've seen, 14 of them have involved Australia, 13 at home, this being the 25th pink ball test, and the 14th that has been staged here in Australia. Why has the rest of the world not come to the party the same way that Cricket Australia has invested in this area?
It's a good question, one I probably should be asking my counterparts the next time I sit at the ICC level. I mean, the reality is very valuable for us here in this country. I mean, you don't have to be, Einstein to figure out that, the Perth test and then the Gabba test are both test matches played significantly in prime time on broadcast at the start of the year when kids are not on school holidays. That's really important to broadcasters. And it's really important to us because we want as many people watching cricket as possible. And there's some reasons for that and there's some commercial imperatives. But ultimately, we've got to continue to evolve everything we do in the sport. Standing still, you're going to get run over. So I think cricket in Australia and James Sutherland was, right at the forefront of this with pink cricket, pink ball to cricket was, that's our opportunity to do things differently. And it won't appeal to everybody. And I know there'll be people who don't like it, but we've got to get comfortable in actually making change. Change is hard for lots of people. In most sports, change comes with difficulties because people love history and tradition. We're trying to thread the needle of having a game that's steeped in history and tradition, but still evolving it, making sure it's relevant for whoever comes next.
So I heard the argument put forward a lot this week. Oh, they would have filled the ground anyway, for example, an Ashes test match. And sure enough, the first 3 days are sold out. So what you're saying, this isn't as much the people that are coming. This is the majority of the population that lives in the southeast of Australia, essentially, it's in a much more friendly time for them to watch on TV.
Yeah, the numbers speak for themselves. I'm not going to rattle off to you the differences in broadcast from one year to the other when I show you a pink ball versus a normal red ball test, but they are significant. I'm not talking about tens of thousands. I'm talking about hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people more who are watching cricket when it's on in a pink ball test. And again, there'll be traditionalists who don't like that. I've said this a number of times. You don't do jobs like mine if you want to be popular and be liked. You have to make decisions that you think are in the best interest of the sport. And leadership and popularity get confused sometimes. I have to make those decisions with the Cricket Australian Board to see what's best for cricket. And sometimes that'll be jarring for people. Unfortunately, that's the way it is.
Have you thought about playing more test cricket in Perth to take advantage of that? That you could play, say, more red ball games, but take advantage of the time slot?
Well, I'd certainly like to play more days of test cricket in Perth. So let's start with that, maybe. So next year, let's hope we get more than two. But, I mean, that has a distinct advantage. And we want to play at that as much as possible. So Whether or not we play more there or not, I'm not sure, but it certainly helps us in the BBL with a different time slot for those games when we play there. So, yeah, lots of upside for us.
I completely understand the commercial reality and the pros of pink ball cricket. I'm not as anti it as other people, but I know there will be a lot of traditionalists out there that will say, why is it after 150 years of Test cricket, we've got an anniversary game, and the way that we're going to pay homage to all of that is to put on a pink ball test, which we've only done 25 times in the history of the game. Why does that match have to be a pink ball game?
Yeah, look, again, it's a good question. But again, I would say this, that we're going to try to, in March 2027, put the greatest celebration on of cricket at 150 years. So the tagline will be 150 years in the making to get to this moment in time. In fact, I was just sitting with Mark Nicholas in that first session, and we're having a spirited debate about making sure we try to bring the Ashes urn across for that particular moment in time, which, you know, he's been very favourable, and I've got to give him great credit because he's going to help us enormously do that. But what we're trying to do is make sure we celebrate everything that's been great at 150 years, but also demonstrate to people we are prepared to change and we are prepared to innovate in order to make sure that Test cricket is as strong in another 150 years as it is today. And that won't happen by chance. It won't happen because I'm pandering to everyone who's just loved it the way it's always been. We have to be able to try to do both, and I think that's a perfect indication of what we're trying to achieve.
Todd Greenberg with me, Grandstand at Lunch on ABC Sport. England, by the way, 2 for 98 with Crawley on 61 and Root on 32. Can I ask you about Usman Khawaja? There's a few things with Uzi. It feels like he's dominated the headlines, obviously, from the end of the Perth test where he was unable to bat due to his back spasms, and obviously he's not playing here. First of all, is he okay? I noticed he put a post up on social media last night basically making comment towards some of the negativity and the hatred that has been spewed in his direction. And even we did a live podcast last week, and I was asked a pretty insightful question from the floor where someone essentially said to me, you know, when you are making criticisms of Uzi in particular, how much do you keep in mind, you know, the response that he gets that basically comes along with that? And as much as, you know, we sit here and we do our best to try and call balls and strikes and call it as we see it, and ultimately that's what we try and do in our role, that is obviously something that comes Uzi's way that doesn't necessarily come for a lot of other players. He's the first player, Islamic player, that we've obviously seen represent Australia in Test cricket. How's he doing?
I'm glad you've asked that question because I spent some time with him this morning. The short answer is he's going really well. He was really close to being fit for this game. Ultimately, it was a decision that he made with the selectors about almost a risk assessment of whether he could get through the game. But the short answer is he's okay. But those things do hurt. And I think sometimes we all need a reminder. This is not specifically about Usman. It's about all professional athletes or those in the spotlight. We have to be very careful about what we say and how we say it. We're dealing with human beings. We all have our frailties. We all have our sensitivities. And, you know, at the very essence, he's a father, he's a husband. And we all take these things. And so some take them harder than others. And I've long reminded myself, you know, always be very careful and wary about what someone else might be going through in whatever sphere of life you're in. But Uzi's going really well. He was quite positive this morning when I spoke to him, which I was pleased about. And he'll be doing everything in his power to make sure he's available and fit for selection.
His comments around the pitch? Basically,
yeah. I mean, look, again, I'll keep what Uzi and I talk about private, but I'd say this. I was disappointed in his comments. I thought he got it wrong. I think on reflection, Uzi would probably choose his words differently. I think he probably let his guard down a bit in an environment that maybe he shouldn't have. We've had that discussion and we move on from there.
What about, and the other story that came out, obviously, that he was playing golf in the lead up to the test. So I think he played 3 rounds of golf in 3 days.
Yeah.
It's a sport that puts a lot of torque on your back. Yep. Ultimately, he walks out, he has a back spasm. Must be worth pointing out, he hadn't had a back spasm previous
completely
to that, but it ultimately means he's not available to fulfill his role and open the batting for Australia.
Yeah, and I would defend him heavily on this because I've seen Uzi over, I reckon, the last 5 years always play golf the day before a test match, and it served him very well. And one of the things that I think gets missed in this debate is golf is an outlet for a lot of cricketers to, one, get out of the hotel, two, get out of their own heads, because this is a very deep and troubling game for people at times, and there's lots of sitting around. Golf is an outlet where you genuinely buy into something else for a period of time without technology, and you're outdoors, and I think it does an enormous amount of good. I can understand why people put one and one together and think they get two, but on this occasion, I will absolutely defend him. I mean, the reality is Mitchell Starc played with him as well and went out and took 10 wickets. So I can understand why people put it together, but I think it's slightly unfair in that it served him well over a long period of time in the way he prepares. And ultimately, all of our players, and this is very much Andrew McDonald's theory, is you will prepare the best you can prepare in order to get the best out of yourself. But then you're held accountable to your performances.
Yes.
And so that's on you. And I think everyone's judged on their performances, and he's no different.
So his level of accountability will essentially say, well, he's unable to play this test, so he's not in the team, and then now he's got the job to try and win back.
Yeah, ultimately, we're all, me included, are accountable for our performances. Working in professional sport, one thing that happens a lot, which is different in business, you've got very public performance reviews all the time. Mm. Every time you turn up here, we get a public performance review, and you know, in a job like mine, you get lots of unsolicited feedback telling you how to do your job better. And that's okay, and there's a reason for that, because people are passionate about what we do. And you know, we're in the sports business, we're in the entertainment business, but we're in the business of emotion and passion. Mm. People are here today because they're physically invested in the outcome. That's a great business to be in.
Yeah. So if he comes back in the team and he wants to play golf the day before the test starts, no one in Cricket Australia would stand in his
way. No, that's completely on him. He's an adult. He's a professional cricketer. If that's his choice, then he has to deliver on the outcomes that come with that.
The team's obviously been going extremely well. They've been collecting trophies. They're obviously arguably the best team in the world over the past few years. One thing that I have been critical of with this selection panel is, as great as they've been, they've had one blind spot, and that's been trying to find a replacement opener at the top of the order. And you can go through the long list with Smith moving to the top, McSweeney, Constance the first time, Marnus, Head, back to Constance, Weatherald, and then obviously now Travis Head gets that opportunity with Usman being unavailable. Is there a thought at all to bring in a new voice? And that's not to say that any of the guys that are doing the job currently should go, but maybe somebody else to come in to bring in some new views to maybe challenge the status quo on the way that it's done?
I haven't thought about that the way you've pitched it, but I do get a sense that people would be surprised about the level of thinking and analysis that goes in and the interaction they might have with people who are inside the system but outside the system. So I'd take that question on notice. I'm very comfortable with the people that we have and the decisions they make and the processes they run through. But again, they're exactly the same as what I talked about with players and myself. They're accountable too. And they've got a very public performance review today.
Yes.
And you will, and like many others, will judge their performance and their decision-making. And there's sort of nowhere to hide in a high-performance environment because you are judged on outcomes. Good, bad, or indifferent, they're binary. The outcomes will ultimately determine what happens next.
This can be a bit dry on radio when we talk about these things, but I know people like my podcast co-host, Ed Cowan, geek out over it. Privatisation in the BBL. Yep. Are we any closer to having an announcement as to what that looks like and when a decision would be made if you're keen to sell off a portion of these teams?
Well, Ed's probably closer to it than most, given he's on the board of Cricket New South Wales, so he's privy to some additional information. Look, the short answer is we've been working on this for a number of months. I feel like we've got really strong buy-in from all of our states. I've worked really closely with the CEO group of each of our state leagues. And to be fair to them, I think they've done an enormous job of upskilling the thinking of why we would do it and how it would eventuate. No, we're not there yet. I can't give you a definitive answer yet, but we've had really positive engagement. And I've been clear on this from the very start. There is private capital going into every T20 league around the world. We're competing against that. Are we going to join that part of the circuit? Are we going to diversify our revenues long-term and think differently? Again, that goes back to what I said before. Change is hard for some people. We've done it a certain way for 15 years. Are we prepared to make it a different model going forward? I think we should definitely be opening our eyes up to change. And if we sit here on this tiny little island that is Australia and think that the global impacts of cricket won't hit us, we will be sadly mistaken.
Todd Greenberg, the Chief Executive of Cricket Australia. Just before you go, Todd, in 1 minute, you're putting together the Future Tours program as well. Are you keeping all of this in mind about what the Big Bash possibly looks like, about creating a window available that doesn't clash with the international scene so your frontline players can feature in your major T20 competition?
Yeah, what we're trying to do is make sure we've got a window that gets more of the best players into the BBL window as we can. At the moment, we've obviously got the Boxing Day test and we've got the Sydney test match. What does that look like in the next 4 to 5 years? But what does it look like in the next 5 to 10 to 15 years? And ultimately, some of that will be a commercial negotiation with us and broadcasters and player availability. But there's one thing that is the same in every sports league around the world, whether it's cricket or it's NFL or the EPL, the best players playing in your league will ultimately guarantee you the best revenues. And so we're no different. We want to get the best players playing in the BBL.
Todd, your time's always appreciated. Enjoy the Brisbane test. Thanks for making yourself available for us on ABC Sport.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Todd Greenberg, from Development Officer to the Chief Executive at Cricket Australia. Always nice to have him with us on Grandstand at Lunch on ABC Sport. England 2 for 98, Crawley 61, Root on 32. Ben Cameron caught up with Jai Richardson a short time ago.
Jai Richardson is an Australian quick coming back from major shoulder surgery. Jai, how's the return been?
Yeah, it's obviously been a long process. It's been frustrating. It's been enjoyable. It's been a lot of things. You know, the time away from cricket often helps when you get back. Reignites the flame, I guess you could say, in terms of the competitiveness and wanting to play and compete. But it's also frustrating in a sense of, you know, at the same token, you're out of the game for a long time, which is never ideal. But at the moment, feeling really good, ready to go, ready to get back into it. Body's feeling great, shoulders progressively feeling better and better. So yeah, can't wait to get back into it.
You played the tour match at Lilac Hill. You were wicketless in the match, but that's not always a reliable indicator as to how someone bowled. How did you feel?
I felt okay, actually. You know, that game for me was selfishly less about the performance and more about getting overs under the belt. Obviously, taking a couple of wickets would have been nice, but it's good to sort of get thrown into the deep end on a really flat wicket to you know, experience what it's like to come back and play high-level cricket again. So, yeah, in that aspect, it was really enjoyable. It was nice to get through and obviously keep building up these overs and hopefully hold myself in good stead for the rest of the summer.
Take us inside the decision, because it was something you had to weigh up for a really long period of time and you were kind of fighting through it. I think of you bowling the ball in from the boundary when you're in the field rather than throwing it in. How did you arrive at the decision that, yeah, I'm going to get this done so that I give myself the best chance of playing Test cricket for Australia again?
Yeah, so essentially had a couple of chats when I was in the Test squad with Andrew McDonald, Paddy, a couple of the other fast bowlers, a lot of people, a lot of the strength and conditioning guys, doctors, physios, everyone. And we sort of knew what, you know, my shoulder was presenting itself as obviously very unstable. And we knew that my wrist getting picked and going into a game meant that, you know, the chances are if something did go wrong, my shoulder was going to be an issue. And that puts in a lot of, that puts a lot of strain on the other teammates and the team and selection process and stuff like that. So we knew that my risk profile going into every game was quite high, and we wanted to reduce that to give myself and the team the best chance. But, you know, it was more about, you know, if I would regret it more post my career if I didn't give it one last shot, to be honest. We knew that my shoulder wasn't great. Do I just sort of get through, deal with what I've got, and keep playing, or do we get it done? And on the off chance that it didn't work, know that I've at least, you know, given it everything that I can. So that's pretty much how we got to the decision.
If it wasn't so sad, it would have been comical when you dislocated your shoulder giving a high five after taking a wicket. Like, how do you reflect on that? Because I remember watching it and just being stunned.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I was pretty happy with the ball that I bowled, to be honest. You know, when a plan comes off, I've wanted to watch that ball back, but I just don't think I can because I know the exact feeling afterwards. But yeah, it does suck. It's not a feeling that I particularly want to go through again. It's never nice. And unfortunately, it was the debutant Keaton as well, who gave the high five, so he was probably feeling a bit flat as well. But look, I mean, if that's the point where your shoulder's at when it's coming out, if you get caught in the wrong position giving a high five, then you probably have to reassess and try and make it better.
You've got the big bash to look forward to, which is going to be tremendous for you, but I'm very reliably informed that maybe to get you through this injury, you are a car enthusiast. You've got a number of different cars, and everyone at the WACA ground knows when you arrive because they can hear you coming from about 2.5 kilometres away. How accurate is that?
Yeah, that is pretty accurate. It's a bit of a running joke. But yeah, the boys do know I like my cars, which is nice. They do know when I leave and when there's a car park that becomes available because they know that I'm gone. But yeah, I do like my cars. It's an expensive hobby, unfortunately. But yeah, I do definitely like my cars.
Appreciate your time. You've got the tour match starting tomorrow. It's great to see you back bowling, such a skillful bowler when you're up and firing. And hopefully we see you in full flight throughout the Big Bash League and in the whites again for WA, and hopefully Australia beyond that.
That would be ideal, but we'll see how we go.
Jai Richardson speaking there with Ben Cameron a short time ago during the lunch break. England 2 for 98, Crawley 61, Root 32. We're only 10 minutes away from the second session being underway on day one. News time.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.